he hit the mic. Bam! So fast.
Well, I wanted to start off with a bang. God. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Let Me Tell You Why. I am your host, Tyler Webster, joined, as always, by my co-host, Danielle Lorenz.
Hello.
And we missed you guys so much. We thought about you every day and every night. I would get, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I get texts from this one telling me, God, I miss my adoring fans. And I was like, I get it. Honestly, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, the adoring fans who apparently all think this is your show that I'm just tagging along to.
Co-host is shared ownership. I don't know how clear that can be.
I understand the assignment, but everyone that I talk to is like, yeah, Tyler's show that he just like has you on all the time. And I'm like, excuse you?
You're on every episode. That's insane.
God. Yeah, I know. I've heard it many a time.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's catch the group up.
Yeah.
What all have they missed? It's not like anything important has been going on in the last, what has it been, 6 months?
It's been
a
really long time.
Oh my God.
It's been a really long time because we just haven't had time in the last 6 months.
Do you want to tell everybody why that is?
I mean, sure. I figured you were going to go on a monologue about Heathers, but, you know.
Well, you know, this is our show, so.
he just wants to give me some time at the beginning to get some words in so that everyone understands that I'm here, too.
Fuck.
But, yeah, so starting in May, we have been busy up until now, which is what, November?
Yeah.
Doing shows with our company. We did Heathers, which was awesome. We did And Then There Were None, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And we finally have a break where we're getting to just kind of go back to kind of our normal things and what we usually do, you know, playing games with our friends and recording our podcasts.
That's
imagine.
Right. And dreading the ever-flowing passage of time. You know, normal stuff like everyday people.
You know, Tyler's daily existential crises.
Naturally. I mean, come on. It wouldn't be a day ending in Y without one. So
I just liked how you slightly fumbled it.
Shut up! I knew you noticed that too. I can't fucking let anything slip past you. So really quickly, because I do want to get in, we have a really fascinating topic for today, but before we do, I will say for me, it was my first time really directing a big musical or really a big show in general. I mean, I had done a little one-act Sleepy Hollow. I was going to say Spring Awakening. Sleepy Hollow for my senior project. That was a fucking disaster. And then I had co-directed another one-act. But outside of that, I mean, mm-hmm. that, I don't want to say it doesn't count, but it is very much not the same as directing Heathers. And it was my first time behind that desk. Oh, also, fun update for everybody. The doctor says my voice is broke and that singing is probably not going to be a career path. So, that as sad and devastating as that is, couldn't have come at a better time because Heathers was a smash hit.
Yeah.
And it was really successful. And it showed me that, hey, directing might be the new avenue for me to explore my creative pursuits. So that was really, really cool. Danielle, what was it like being the lead in back-to-back shows?
Well, I discovered that I am to be cast in a very specific type of character. Their name has to start with V-E-R and end in A. has to shoot her love interest at the end of the show. has to either real or fake hang herself and just constantly get either verbally or physically beat on throughout the show.
And people got mad at me for precasting her. Apparently. I'm just saying, her resume spoke for itself. Who else has that kind of experience?
Apparently, I have a very specific type. but no, I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was exhausting, but it did kind of remind me, you know, because at the end of Christmas Carol last year, I remember I said this to you, which was, you know, it's very satisfying to have your directorial thing come through. But I know for me specifically, it didn't give the same sense of satisfaction that actually performing does.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I loved directing and I will absolutely do it again. But for me, it's like I really enjoyed all of the first part. And then like seeing it at the end is great. But it's almost like being a parent in the sense that you feel like the job is never over.
Mm.
And then suddenly the job is over. But, like, and it's just weird. So I know for me, I really loved getting back in the saddle with getting to perform again because I had not performed in over a year since Next to Normal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I both was terrified of being too rusty to have deserved the precasting. I was terrified. Most of the first, like, 2 weeks of rehearsals, I was just terrified that everyone was going to hate me.
Well, and that's the thing, is everybody did go in with some preconceived notions, but it didn't take but a week's worth of rehearsals before everyone kind of unanimously was like, okay, we get it. We get it. We totally get it.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, something that was really cool. And it's funny, too, especially with this new stint that I'm trying with directing. I actually had the opposite experience, and I was thinking about that the other day, so it's mm-hmm. funny that you mentioned the satisfaction that you get is more from performing yeah. than in directing. This is going to be very par for the course with me.
Oh boy.
When I'm acting, the adrenaline rush comes in two parts. It comes from being in character and mm-hmm. knowing that I'm creating good art, and it comes from the applause. Because I'm an attention whore, and that's a huge part. That's a huge aspect of why I really like doing this. I don't know. I can't describe it because it's me knowing that my artistic capabilities is moving the audience to a certain level of noise.
Well, yeah, right? I don't think anyone doesn't get a little boost from the applause, you
and
know?
I get more than I should. And so, but the opposite side of that is. The dread of being a performer is, and being a performer for a while, is I'm comparing every single applause line, but as a performer, I'm comparing all of the applauses to one another going, okay, not as good, okay, that was better, okay, this, okay, that, versus directing, where every applause line has my name on it somewhere, and that was super satisfying. So when the audience was jumping out of their seats doing backflips and shit, that is 100% because of you guys and the talent that you guys put on display. I was just the ferryman for it. And honestly, I was thrilled to be in that role. Way more so than I thought I would be.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that it honestly rivals acting and performance in terms of how much gratification I got from that creative process, which
yeah.
I was thrilled to realize, because I did not think that would be the case, not mm-hmm. being the center of attention.
We live and we learn, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that's been the bulk of what's been going on, aside from just like normal job, blech, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing super exciting in that vein. And I don't know that we have anything defined coming up. We're figuring out what the spring show is going to be, and then we are just working on Christmassy things.
Yeah.
Trying to celebrate as much holiday as we can while we can.
Yeah, we're working on living life.
Yeah, just living life, you know?
Has not been a thing for over 6 months, so that
not
is...
Not a normal life, for sure.
So what a tremendous breath of fresh air, and it didn't take me but a week before I was like, what the fuck do I need to be working on right now?
Well, and then there's poor Samuel, who is in Tech Week currently.
Mm-hmm.
No breaks, not yet. Not,
yeah, no,
not for
no rest for the
more,
weary.
Not for a couple more weeks.
Yeah, for sure.
But
poor guy.
Yeah, I know. But that's why I get to be here today.
Yeah.
And why we get to jump back into this.
So speaking of jumping back in, you had a number of phenomenal ideas in terms of some themes that we were going to explore and games we were going to do on the podcast. What do you have for us today?
So the first one I thought of was that you and I could essentially come up with different specific, pretty, like try to make it more specific, scenarios in life or in public that either have no effect on us or a very intense effect on us.
Hmm.
And I would be interested to discuss the difference, because with you being Mr. Intense Extrovert Man, cannot stand being alone for 5 minutes.
No,
kind of
I can't.
Whereas I love being by myself. I'm totally cool with it. And like, you know, I say to Samuel, we were talking about our minimums and our floor for how many social interactions we need in like a week outside of each other, like friend interactions. And I think I told him that minimum, I think I need like two, not counting like work and stuff, because if he counts work, then he has a ton. But he was saying that including work, like, you know, with being able to interact with like John and Carson and all of that, it makes it easier. So he was like, yeah, maybe like 3 or 4. But he was like, if my work was remote or not with friends, he would need way more than that.
Yeah. I'm about 5 more than whatever I get in a given week is my maximum, is what I need.
And yet, here's the thing. You're always overscheduling yourself mm-hmm. with your friends. And yep. then and like, so stressed out, and you're like, oh, I just wish I had some time to breathe and time to myself, and then you get time to breathe and time for yourself, and you hate it.
That's right. The point is, I can't be happy. So,
and let me tell you why.
Let me tell you why. So, I did come up with a couple of scenarios. Okay. Do you have some as well?
I was just gonna wing it.
Oh, let's wing it. Yeah.
No, but tell me the ones that you have.
No, fuck these. No.
Throws them through the wall.
Okay. So this is this one's super specific, so we'll get to that in a second. So I don't know if this is in the vibe of what you're looking for.
It's okay. We'll figure out if it is.
You're playing a game or a sport that you enjoy very much.
Okay.
You're extremely good at it. Okay. And you want people to play it with you, but they're new and they're trying to get the hang of things. How do you ensure that the friend has a good time?
So I don't know that I don't. Like.
And that's because you're an extrovert or an introvert.
No. I'm saying, I don't make sure that they have a good time. Like, okay, the example I'm going to throw out. I'm going to throw out the example.
So basically the question was, hey, if you were an extrovert, what kind of extrovert would you be? And you're just like, not applicable. What kind of fucking question is that?
No.
I wouldn't. Next question.
What I mean by that, and I think this is just... So I'm not super competitive unless I'm really good at something.
Mm.
And then I don't care about making sure the other person has fun. This is my time. And so, like, for instance...
God in heaven.
There is a game. Do you know ERS? Like Egyptian Rascrew? The slappy card game?
No. I've seen people play it, but I don't think I've
played it. Yeah, we played it 1 year at my birthday, but I don't think you were in that one. I think you were playing a different game. Because we were all, like, playing board games.
Yeah.
And, it's essentially, like, you have to be really fast about, like, you know, there's a lot of rules, and you have to slap certain cards and things like that, and your goal is to get the entire deck. I am fucking amazing at that game. I've been playing it since I was in, like, elementary school. Every time I get the chance to play it, I'm always just like, let's see if I'm bad now, and I never am.
Mm-hmm.
I always kick ass. And so I'll teach people the game. Like, at my birthday, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna teach people the game. I wiped the floor with everybody, and I did not care. I was just like, I win, you guys suck, I win the game. Like, so that's me. What about you?
Holy fuck. Okay, so I actually, so over the years, especially with how I have gotten responses from my friends. I mean, I think we can agree I have changed a great deal since when we first met each other.
Yes.
And I had gone through a number of different external stimuli. And so friends would... I got a lot of shit for coming off as arrogant. And so one of the things about that is if I was good at anything, that put a huge target on my back. And so from there, I actually started to kind of like Dash in The Incredibles. Go for a second! Go for a second!
Yeah.
Right?
Like,
where.
Yeah, play yourself down.
I don't want to drown people in things that I'm good at. And then as a result, I'm not that good at things now. And so. Because I don't like care that much, you know what I mean? And so. So for me, games that I get a lot of enjoyment out of, I think the best example would be Super Smash Brothers. I mean, okay. we had a person in the friend group who was a really big arbiter of that game, and was one of the big celestial bodies that we all kind of orbited around to get us to play Smash. And when he left the friend group, I'm sitting there, been busting my fucking ass trying to get good at this stupid game so I could be competitive with him. And he's gone now. I've got this quote-unquote skill. And I'm like, how the fuck? I still want to play this game. Like, you know what I mean? So it was, I just kept putting it on and just kind of leaving it there. Being like, I mean, this is here. What do y'all think? Oh, yeah, we'll play a little bit. And it's about picking your spots, right? It's about knowing when to let people get a couple of wins, because if they lose consistently, they get discouraged and then they stop trying, right? Because if I'm just consistently, most people, right? Samuel, if he's getting his ass kicked with something, he goes into man mode and he's just like, I am going to rededicate my life to never feeling like this again. That's not actually how he feels, but that's how it looks.
Not with Smash.
No, not with Smash, but with sports.
With sport general,
things, for yes. sure. That was definitely how it was with pickleball. But with Smash in particular, nobody likes to just be constantly beat up on for the most part. And yeah. so what I try and do is subtly and / not so subtly, there are three characters that I'm really, really good at. And if I'm playing with someone who I know is not at a comparable skill level, I will intentionally pick a character that I do not know how to play, specifically to kind of give myself a handicap, and I'll steer into it like it's some, I'm busting out the big guns, and then I get my shit wrecked, and then it's like, okay, I'm somewhat viable. And as you're getting viable playing against me being a worse character, you're learning how to play, you're getting better. And as you get better, now you pose more of a threat when I'm playing characters that I'm really good at. And next thing you know, you caught the bug. And now everyone plays Smash. So
you are such a dad already in all of these things that you're doing.
Well, I mean, so...
Our friends are going to know who you think are actual threats when you 1v1 them. If you pull out someone you know really well, like mm-hmm. Hero, mm-hmm. it's like they're like, okay, yeah, so I'm an actual threat. You whip out someone you don't know, like Diddy Kong, mm-hmm. it's like they're going to look at you and be like, excuse me?
So the one that I would always use is Mii Sword Fighter, because in the community, he's considered one of the worst characters in Smash. Is Mii Sword Fighter specifically. And so I went out of my way to make sure that I have a Mii that looks like myself in like a really cool waistcoat with a rapier. And so whenever I'm fighting someone and I know that they're getting their asses beat, I was just like, I'm taking the gloves off. I will fight you myself. And then I play Mii in the game, and then it's a much closer game because he's just not that viable. And so that's my way of, if you know, you know, that's me kind of putting the kitty gloves on.
Oh my god, see, I don't care about that. Things that I'm really good at, like ERS, or like, oh my god, you're gonna hit me with some Harry Potter trivia? No way. I'm not going easy. Harry Potter, seen it, it's done. Don't even try.
I would love to play that actually with the group. That would be fun.
I have Harry Potter seen it.
Oh, we gotta hit that. So, it's funny that you mentioned Harry Potter trivia, because I will never forget humiliating myself at your
bridal shower
where what was the page that Snape told Harry to turn to in the beginning of the second book or whatever, and I was just like, oh me, they're like, all right, Tyler, what you got? I'm like, turn to page 394, and there's like, it's 200, and I was like, fuck me.
No,
Wait, did I get it backwards?
You got it backwards.
Fuck!
You said 294.
I got
it
wrong.
394.
Yep. So I said 294, and then everyone was like, what a fucking idiot! And I was like, oh no.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't even finish the quote before Danielle was just like,
because I heard two and went, where the fuck is this guy? And like, there ain't no two in that page number. Come on.
Okay, so I think that answers that question. How about you? What do you got?
Okay, let me think. Okay, so this is an interesting one, because I don't know how this is going to read with, like, introvert versus extrovert. It may just be, like, different types of anxieties.
Okay.
But let's see. You're in high school,
mm-hmm.
and you have to get from the third floor to the first floor on a staircase. You have to carry all of your books. You don't have time to go to your locker. Because it's like a 5-minute, you know, mm-hmm. period switch. And you can't see the stairs with how many people there are. How do you respond to that situation?
Start screaming as loud as I can. And as people start to clear a wide berth, because they're like, what's this crazy person doing? Hey, look, the stairs.
I only throw that out there because that was my entire high school experience.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was we had three stories, and it was like so many people, because it was three stories, but the halls weren't that long.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's what, like 1,200 or maybe 1,600 like total students. And they're all changing at the same times, going all different directions.
That's
and so
a madhouse.
All the hallways are packed. All the staircases are packed. there is no, like, you're going to just smoothly get from point A to point B. It's going to take a while. You got to carry all your books. You're probably going to have people jostling you. On the stairs, we had people fall down and up the stairs all the time because they just, like, couldn't see. Or, like, or they'd be so tired that their foot just catches and they just, like, go flying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What kind of barbaric madhouse was that?
I mean, it's in Columbus. What do you expect?
Well, fair. Everything's bad there. So I'm trying to picture it. It is tricky, too, because I always had a book bag.
No, we weren't allowed book bags.
Stop.
You could bring them to school, but you had to leave them in your locker. You had to carry all of your books.
Jesus.
And so, you like, you know, if you couldn't make it to your locker between two periods, then congratulations, you have to carry everything that you have to carry until you can get to your locker, essentially. So, like, I think there were several years where, like, the whole first half of the day, I have to just carry, like, 10 books. And then in the second half of the day, all my classes happened to be closer to my locker, and so I could switch in and out easier.
Mm.
But we weren't allowed to have book bags in class. You had to just carry them.
So I think I have the answer. So it depends. Are we saying what my high school self would have done or what I would do if I was in high school now?
What you would do if you were in high school now.
Okay, because my high school, yeah, my high school self would have just guessed and prayed. Which is a lot of what my high school career was, until I got a little bit more confident. And, currently I would take the stack of books, press them against my chest as hard as I could, look ridiculous, put one hand on the railing to ensure that I don't fall, and probably out loud make some joke about how stupid I look.
Well, see, that was the other thing, is that if you're carrying a huge stack of books, like textbooks and binders and all of that, if you're carrying all that, you know, normally it's like almost propped up like against your stomach and like, and you're kind of leaned back. You're, unless you're, you got crazy strength or you don't have that many books, you can't really grab the railing. So it's just like good fucking luck, dude.
Yeah. I would just put myself in an awkward and an uncomfortable position looking really dumb. And then every step marching up the stairs being like, who the fuck designed this dumbass staircase? This is impossible. And then everyone would laugh and they would give me the key to the city and it would be really cool.
See, in my high school, that is not, like, that wouldn't have even been seen as funny. Everyone just would look at that one person like, shut the fuck up. Like,
that sounds about right.
For me, I was very small and still am. haven't grown in 14 years. And so, you know, on the staircase, it was just a hope and a prayer, just hoping that we didn't miss the fucking stairs or anything.
Fair.
Or that I didn't drop my books and take someone's feet out on the way. But in the hallways, because I was so small, and I'm still really good at it to the point where it's kind of a problem with, like, being in crowds now, I am really good at, you know how, like, urchins in D&D can, like, slip through cities really fast and all that? I'm really good at slipping through crowds very quickly. Because I can find the small spaces and go for them immediately because I spent 4 years in hell of just a crowd and having to get from point A to point B when no one is moving. And so even now, like, you know, I'll be trying to, like, lead people through a crowd and I can get through so fast. And then I look back and Samuel's like 20 people behind and I'm like, oh shit, okay, I gotta wait. Like, not everyone can just, like, like, all the way through.
So it's funny that you say that because that was a skill I had learned when I was serving. I'll never forget Ruth's Chris. They had the, well, they still do, the 500-degree sizzling plates that if they if they hit your neck, they'll fuse to your skin. And it I heard it's really fucking painful. And that definitely didn't happen to me very early on in my serving career there. But what you would, I mean, you would have, when I was a server's assistant, I just had that big jug of water because I was the professional water boy. And I told that joke to every single table that I went to and do the impression back when that was appropriate.
Oh my God.
It was a different time. It's the 90s, baby. So yeah, I developed this technique where my body would just, I was very skinny at the time, and my body would just contort to, like, fit through crowds, and I was able to slip in and out with absolutely no issue.
Yep.
And I always was just interested to see the different odd S shapes that my body would take slipping through the different cracks of people.
You should have gone on that game show Hole in the Wall.
I like to think I would be good at it.
I don't know if I would be good at it. I really don't. Like, yeah. I might be, but I'm not sure. I think about it and I'm like, I don't know. I'm very good at like crunching up mm-hmm. into like a very small shape and getting through things. But if I have to do like crazy pose and then get it perfect, I'm pretty sure I'd fuck it up.
It's funny you talk about game shows. I was thinking about that the other day. The like hole in the wall, if I remember correctly, and like the floor is lava.
Oh yeah,
were two
yeah,
game
yeah.
shows that I was like, man, I feel like I could do a good job on that show. I wonder, you know, man, I should. No, I mean, and then I was like kind of debating if I should even try to be on that show, and then it hit me. I was like, with how the announcers and how this show is ran, it would make me want to jump into the lava and hope that it was real. Because they have, the announcers are just like, and Tyler is going over the big rock of the who gives a shit. And it's just like, I fucking hate that.
They're not doing that while they're climbing, though.
I always imagine they did.
No!
Because I'd be flipping off the camera. I was like, will you shut the fuck up? I'd be kicked off very quickly.
Oh my god.
They're like, we can't air any of this, Tyler. This is terrible content. And I was like, that's your fault for condescending me.
We talked about me and Samuel, who we would have is like, because I think it's like usually teams of three
mm-hmm.
that like compete, sometimes teams of two. And so me and Samuel were like, if we had a third person, who would we bring on? And we discussed you at the time. We discussed someone who's not in the group anymore.
Mm.
But like we threw out a bunch of different options of like, who we think would be the best person to bring on in addition for what reason. And your reason was that we were like, we could probably get him to go for something that like neither of us could probably get because we want to survive.
But I would take the risk.
You would take the risk and be like, well, if I do it, it's going to be sick.
Yes.
And so like either way, you're like, I'm just going to go for it. And if I fall in, I fall in. And,
yes.
And so I was like, I feel like Tyler would be the move because of that. Just because I feel like you would do that.
That is precisely correct. Provided the award isn't something that I like need, right? Mm. Like I think often about being on any of the Mr. Beast videos.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, you know what I mean? It's like, he does not make it easy. And he puts so much life-changing money that would just fix my entire life in an instant, right? If I get $1 million, I get caught up on debt, I pay for the, get a theater, and you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. so much, I could do so much with that money. And so I would go into it, and you're going up against 100 other people more times than not, where some of them are there just because it's cool to be on YouTube, and maybe a good 20 to 25% of them are like feral and need the money. And I would be inconsolable if I lost to some bullshit. And it plagues me every time I watch one of those stupid fucking videos because I'm sitting here going, this is really good content. I'm already getting anxious putting myself in that position. And that's my story about Mr. Beast.
Well, what's your next scenario that you have?
My next scenario that I have is... Oh, that's a good one. Okay. So, I have a couple.
Okay.
So, you run into a former classmate who you barely remember.
Oh,
they yeah. remember you fondly and want to have a conversation. What do you do and how do you navigate it?
So this happened to me at my birthday this year. You were there at the liquor store, the guy at the counter.
Oh, yeah.
This happened to me where I walked up and I knew his face, mm-hmm. but we were never close.
Mm-hmm.
And he immediately is just like, Danielle! And like, is freaking out and is like, so how's everything going? Like, how's Kennesaw? And I'm like, you remember I went to Kennesaw? Oh my God. Oh no. And I'm like panicking because I'm like, I know this guy. What is his freaking name? And it took the whole conversation before I finally remembered his name. And as we're leaving, I was like, bye! You know, his name. I don't want to say it.
Jack Marius Tech Therapist.
Yes, exactly. I was like, bye dude. And I saw that he kind of like lit up when he saw that like I knew his name,
mm-hmm.
but it was one of those things where like in those kinds of situations I am very good at just either talking until I remember
mm.
or bringing up one of my friends who doesn't know the person mm-hmm. and being like, oh, you know, this is Tyler. Mm-hmm. And then getting an introduction, which did happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember talking to him because he saw my necklace and he was like, oh, I like your necklace. That's sacred geometry. Is that the flower of life or the seed of life? And I was like, I don't know if he's bullshitting. I'm going to give the wrong answer and see if he corrects me.
The people in Columbus are very new agey and kind of witchy a little bit. Not all of the people, but a lot of but a lot of like the college people, especially artsy college people, a lot of them are into that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't have been surprised if he was being completely for real. But that sounded so cursed.
I'm sorry, I was yawning and laughing at the same time.
But it was
what did it sound like? It sounded normal.
It sounded like
it sounded very funny.
It sounded like you were either mocking it or like doing an impression. Like I knew what was up, but like no audio people would have known. They would have just been like, "What the fuck was that? Why do you sound so weird?"
It was the weirdest fucking non sequitur laugh I've ever heard.
No, but you know that situation did happen, and like I did panic a little bit just because I was like, I know him. But God, I can't remember his name. And mm-hmm. so I was grateful when you walked up and then like, you know, towards the end of the conversation, he like introduced himself and it was like right when I had remembered the name. But I was like, I think it's that. But what if I'm wrong? So then when he introduced himself and it was the same name, I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, so that's I was right. So funny. But no, I mean, on the inside, I'm panicking. On the outside, I'm just like, I gotta play it cool. I gotta be really chill because, you know, especially now, if it's theater people, I'm like, on the off chance they move up here and want to, like, audition, I can't let them think that I forgot about them if they decide to come up and, like, audition for our company or something, mm-hmm. you know? So I try to keep it really cool on the outside, and if I have a friend, I try to bring them up and be like, hey, and, you know, get the whole introduction happening.
I just steer into it and pray. That's my approach with it. If I see someone, a prime example. So, fun fact for the listeners at home, this Thursday, I think I'm celebrating a month sober. I think.
That was a fast month.
I know. I'll double check on that. But anyway, I'm sober. And yay. Let's go that. So, it is this Thursday.
It's Thursday. The 10th is next.
It's, I mean, 4 weeks. 4 weeks. Not like a calendar month, but like 4 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But regardless. So, anyway, who gives a shit? It's a landmark for me.
I was more concerned that maybe you didn't know what day the 10th was on, and that was me trying to be like...
I wrote it down.
Okay.
Yeah, I have it in the calendar because it's a day of celebration. And so anyway, my point behind that is I've gone sober because I realized that I have an unhealthy relationship with Delta 8 weed stuffs and drinking. But there was a time where that wasn't the case. And I was going into my local D8 dispensary and I bumped into an old a classmate that that was in my theater class, and she knew me. She was a few years younger than me, so I was in Mr. Confidence mode. Yeah. So I was making friends, you know, pretty easily at that point in my life, as opposed to me before that, which was just a complete bumbling moron. And I must have made an impression because she remembered me well, and I did not know who the fuck she was. And it was driving me insane. And the best part is she followed me on Instagram, and I'm looking at her and I'm like, still nothing. Nothing. Just genuinely do not remember.
Oh my God.
And so when I bumped into her, she's like, oh my God, is that Tyler Webster? And I was just like, there she is! Oh my God! Oh, hey, come here, Chica. Let me give you a big hug. Oh my, how have you been?
Can't do the there she is.
Oh, I always do it. I always do the there he is. Oh God! And just get really hyped for it, and and just use a lot of like pet names like Chica or Bro or my guy. Jeez, like, how long has it been? 4, 5, maybe even 6. And then I, like, lean in with the rock, like, eyebrow raise, where I'm like, months, weeks, days, years.
Yeah, 6 days ago, and you forgot somebody already.
I fucking know people. And so, And so, but no, we were having a conversation and she had said something. And the funniest part is the reason why this interaction sticks out of my head is because she said something that made my eye twitch a little bit. And she's just like, I always knew you were a stoner. And I had just recently gotten into D8 stuff and I was very straight laced like all throughout high school. So my eyes started twitching. I was like, no, this is a newer, you know, that you got me. All right, let's change the subject.
Oh my god.
And yeah, that was that had me dying because she was steering into like, oh, I knew for a fact. I was like, we really didn't start until like this year. But I'm like, all right, yep, I get it. Anyway.
I've definitely like every time I've done this, luckily the person has known me. But I am the person who, if I don't quite believe that they know who I am, I ask them who I am.
You are an asshole.
If I don't quite believe them. Oh my
god, that's so mean.
Like, but every time I've asked, the person has actually known. where I've been like, do you actually remember me? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, what's my name? And they're like, Danielle. And I'm like, okay, you actually remember me. And then like, I'll move on. But like, there have been times, many times, where I have just not bought it. And just for fun, I'm like, let's just see what happens if I do this. Who am I?
I don't even know. You've been co-host for over a year. I don't know. You put me on the spot like that. I'm panicking. I think your last name starts with a J.
No, I've only done it a few times. Like when the mood has struck me to just be a little extra chaotic and to just see, you know, just be like, you know, let's add some spice to this dish.
That has happened at a party I went to with a mutual friend. This was years ago. And I bumped into, I think it was a girl. And the funny thing is, if she bumped into me now, I still wouldn't remember. And we were talking. We were about maybe 7 to 10 minutes into the conversation. We were having a long chat, mm-hmm. just catching up. And I'm sitting there desperate, trying to be like, just give me something. There's nobody's home. And she looks at me and she's just like, you don't remember who I am, do you? And I was like, can I be honest with you? No way in fuck. I have no idea who you are, and I'm a terrible person. I'm a terrible friend. A lot of people hate me. And I just go immediately into the self-deprecating humor to kind of try and ease the tension of you think less of me. And you know what? I do too. I agree with you. This guy that you're talking to sucks. And I feel like, as an extrovert, that's very disarming. Being self-aware and knowing when people are going to have certain reactions from you and being able to meet that head on is an extrovert trait of being able to get in front of that and be like, yep, this is awkward and it's my fault and I acknowledge that and I'm sorry.
See, here's the thing. We've talked about this before that I have had to teach myself how to be more extroverted just because I'm in theater and it's not going to work if you're not, you know, at least a little bit extroverted. I'm still really bad about it in like audition spaces. Like I don't try to meet people like when I'm sitting outside an audition. I just bring a book. Like on Sunday, that's what I did. I was at like a general audition and I showed up and there's a ton of people around. And I knew it was going to be a while. I ended up waiting for like 2 hours. And so I just brought a book. And that was that. Because there were people all around me. And I was just like, I don't... Like, everyone already knows each other. Like, they're all talking to each other. I'm not going to go butt in, like, if I'm not asked to be in the conversation. Because that's my other thing, is that every time I have tried to force myself into something, even in theater, it never works out, or at least it never works out to where I feel like I'm fully wanted. Like there was a show I did and it was at like my home theater in Columbus, and you know, I'm one of the like kind of bigger characters. I'm a named character. I'm not like a lead, but I'm supporting. Mm-hmm. And so all the leads and the supporting all kind of like hung out together all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, you know, let me, like, get in on this, you know? Right. And so I started just kind of, like, trying to be in the conversation. Oh, my God, did our personalities not vibe? Like,
oh God.
They were all, and this is not even meant as a derogatory thing. It's just meant because I am not a person that easily holds conversations with people who are kind of like this. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of in that, like, I don't like the term because it is mean, but in that kind of like basic category. of what they're interested in and kind of how they talk and mm-hmm. like what they hold as most important.
I like sports and my dog. And it's like, oh, Jesus.
Well, like, it's not even that. It's just like, it's all stuff I can't relate to. And so I'm like trying to be in the conversation, but I'm like, I don't really have anything to offer here. And like the only girl that I really vibed with was one of the other supporting, but she was like the center of the Venn diagram. Like, mm-hmm. she got along with me, and then she got along with all of them. Mm. And so, but, like, I'm over here in the other half of the Venn diagram. And it's not that we didn't get along. Like, I would still spend time with them. Like, they had, like, a whole day where, like, we went to this, it's like the farmer's market that they hold every Saturday in downtown. And, or, like, you know, going to lunch or, like, things like that. Like, I got along with them, but it always felt a little bit like I wasn't wanted. Mm. And I'm like, you know, I don't know how much this is. And so now it's like whenever I'm in a show, I kind of just wait for the people that want to talk to me to talk to me.
Yeah.
So like, you know, with Heather's, it's like, okay, I have a bunch of friends already. But as far as like new people, you know, Gray is coming up and talking to me all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like Jordan's talking to me a good bit and like things like that. And then in like way back in Beauty and the Beast, I was hardly friends with anybody for most of the process. Mm-hmm. And then I suddenly became friends with, like, with Samuel, with John, and, like, all of them kind of all at once, mm-hmm. like, right towards the end. But it was because they opened up to me. I found whenever I try to force my way in and be like, we're going to be friends now, it doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is something that only works for extroverts. To just walk up and adopt somebody and yeah. just be like, we're gonna be friends. And like, and then it happens. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for an introvert. I've tried. Like, it just doesn't.
Well, so that actually, that sparked another one, if I'm not hogging all the questions. Mm-mm. So let me set the scene.
Okay.
You're booked on, it could be film, it could be theater, it doesn't matter. You're booked on a professional paid project.
Okay.
And you're really excited.
Yeah.
And the director and the cast, they're all big players or steps to big players. And you know you need to be likable in this moment because not only is this going to pay the bills, it's also going to be a huge stepping stone for your future career.
Yep.
You start mixing it up with these people, trying to be as pleasant as possible. And you have absolutely nothing to connect with them on. What's the answer? How do you navigate through it? Because so, I have an extrovert answer, and it's not always foolproof, but it's the best I've got, and I'm curious what yours is.
So mine, if I don't have anything to connect with them on, but I want to connect with people, so I've only gotten into this mode a couple of times, and it was when I was just like, I am here to specifically make connections. Mm-hmm. And so I have to put myself in that mindset. And if I walk in that way, then it's almost like the doors on my brain that are usually completely shut, I just kind of like take them off the hinges. And it's just like, okay, I'm going to be completely open. I'm going to be vibrant and energetic. And I'm not going to be making, like, any, you know, I'm not going to make any jokes that could be questionable, like, as far as, like, might offend somebody or anything. Mm-hmm. But I will absolutely make a joke if it's there, and I will feel out the vibe. And if people think it's funny, then I'll continue. And so, honestly, I try to just bond with people through humor if I can't do it through anything else. The only reason it didn't work with that show is because at that time, I could not have been more insecure in myself. Mm. I didn't get fully, fully secure in myself until I moved up here and got with Samuel. Like, really? I was very insecure in myself up until then. And so, at that time, I was just like, I just need to be like them. And like, I just didn't have their sense of humor and like the things that they wanted to do. But I do feel like if I had just had my sense of humor now and been comfortable sharing it, that might have worked. But I was like too scared to make jokes until we were like in the dressing rooms, like, you know, doing the show every day. And then I was like, oh, now I feel a little more comfortable making jokes. But even then it was like barely and mostly just to that one girl. Mm. But, like, yeah, it was, I don't know, that's usually my thing, is, like, if there's nothing experience-wise or interest-wise that we can connect on, I'm gonna try for humor.
Yeah.
And if that works, then great. If it doesn't, I just hope that they like what I do. Like, I just hope that they think I'm nice and that they think I'm doing a good job, because those are the two things that, like, that I think about whenever I enter, like, a new workspace, because that was Ron's big motto, was just do your job well and treat people nicely. Those are the only things that are required.
I like that.
And he was like, even if, like, you know, like, someone can be wicked talented, someone can be brand new to the game, but if you're both doing those two things, then you're, both of you are doing a great job.
Yeah, I completely and so, agree.
You know, my whole thing with that is if we are just not clicking on any front, then I'm just going to focus on those two things. I'm going to be like, I'm going to be nice to people, show up with a good attitude, and I'm going to do my job really fucking well.
Yeah.
Because I have nothing else.
So for me, when I'm in social situations that I know I need to get along with people, and I also know that I'm at the disadvantage because I'm just of a different world than they are, I just become the interviewer. And I figure out very quickly, because it's not hard to tell what people are passionate about. They'll force the conversation to go to something that they know. And if I can see, like, the most dreaded thing for me is sports. Jesus Christ. God, man, when someone's personality is only sports and I need them to like me, it's just like, why do you make this fucking hard? God.
And Aaron and Samuel, who you're close with both of
them.
No,
they have so many things that we can connect over.
No,
Star Wars, D&D, there's all kinds of stuff that we see eye to eye on. But, like, I'll never forget a couple of jobs ago when I was working at X company.
I think I remember you telling me
about
this.
Yeah, the one where I did not get along with anybody there.
Big alpha male sports guys.
Unga bunga sportsmen were, you know, riffing on the Cowboys and whatnot, and I just don't speak a lick of it. And I go, like, look, we're clearly of two separate worlds, right? You speak a language I don't speak, but you're passionate about it, and that's what I care about, so I'm going to ask you as many questions as I can that can keep the conversation interesting, because people like talking about what they like. So just feigning interest, even though I couldn't give a fuck what this guy did with a football. I don't care. You're boring me to tears, but I need you to like me. So get the fuck out of it. So he threw the ball from the other side of the end zone to the other side of the end zone. That's how many, isn't that like 100 yards? Wow. Get the fuck out of here. No wonder why he's your favorite or whatever.
See,
fucking kill me.
I do a similar thing, but not with complete strangers. Like, if there's someone that I know, but I'm not close with, but they have, like, for instance, like, come into our show, or they've come to an event that we're at, and I can tell that they don't really know a lot of the people, then I'll kind of try to, like, seek them out and just be like, and I'll just come up with a topic, like, you know, so what do you do? Oh, okay, you know, what's that like? Like, are you passionate about it? Is it more of like you're just doing it for now? Like, is there anywhere else that you would rather be? And just see if that leads us to other points of conversation. But either way, then, like, then that's less of, like, so much I'm trying to make a friend, but I'm just trying to, like, I guess, help that person feel more seen in, like, a social space, because I know how much, like, it, in those social spaces, if I go to a place and the person that I know or the people that I know everybody, and so they're going around to all those people, I'm just, like, terrified.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, can someone please help? Like, I am stressed.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, I know for me, like, if I'm in a similar situation where I'm just, like, completely on the back foot, like, I'll never forget, we, at that same company, it was early on in my time there, and I was hired alongside another dude, right? I'm coming in with my acting experience. This guy was a pro golfer. He was a model. You know what I mean? Like, he is just as alpha as it gets, right? And I come in here, and I was just, and I'm like, I'm working on my plays. You know, so it was very, we're two different worlds, and those types of people, they don't need people like me. And they make that very clear very fucking quickly. So we go in there and we break for lunch. You know, the boss is paying it on the company cards. We go out to this nicer restaurant and we all sit down and it's just awkward. It's just awkward, man. Every time they try and bring something up, it gets shot down. And every time I try and bring something up, it's just silence. And they're just looking at me like, why would you say that? And it's like, I want to jump off a cliff. And so I'm like, all right. You know what? what are some things that everybody can agree on? What kind of music do y'all like? I mean, that's, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, come on, everybody listens to music. And one of the guys, I swear to fucking God, just goes, I don't really like music. You don't... What the fuck do you mean you don't really like music? I mean, I don't listen to music. What the fuck? What do you mean? What do I mean? And I'm like, oh, well, what about y'all? I mean, we listen to music, but we're not really big music people. I'm like, where the fuck am I? Is this the Twilight Zone?
Are you all aliens?
Right. Like... And then it's like, I'll put on the fucking radio sometimes. One guy's like, I like country. And it's just like, I can't be here with y'all, man. I really can't. You got, how is it that each and every one of you are savants in your sales field where it's your job to sell people and be likable, yet with me, with us in this group, you are the most unlikable fucking pieces of shit. They're not pieces of shit, but they're very frustrating. Unlikable as hell, and they put absolutely no effort in when I'm clearly trying, and I think that's the thing that will get under my skin almost immediately.
See, with how much I talk, like Samuel, I've said it to Samuel where, like, if I'm watching like a movie or a TV show, mm-hmm. the part where I start to not be able to believe it is if the character isn't like crazy, crazy introverted, if the character isn't, but they're sitting there not really able to think of anything to talk about, I'm like, just go through the alphabet. Pick a topic. What's your favorite animal? Mm-hmm. There you go. A. Just go through it. There's no end to what you can ask someone just out of the blue. And so whenever
who was the last person you've beaten up? B.
Well, I was about to say something fucked up. Never mind.
Do you like cock? C.
But no, like, I have all those questions. I just have, like, so many in my mind that I'm curious about at all times. And so I'm just like, you know, I never buy it. If, like, if the character is at all extroverted mm-hmm. and they're just sitting there awkwardly, I'm like, bruh, that ain't real.
Yes, it is. I empathize. No, seriously, like, because... It, being extroverted, just like people, right? You'll have different moods and different states of being. And so, like, for me, if, like, my brain was a little fried due to some stuff today. And so, going into social situations, I'm drawing blanks. You know what I mean? And so, I'm trying to have conversations with people, and I'm just like, weather's kind of crazy. And it's like, I'm like, how could this happen? We're smarter than this. Like, no. how is it that I can't think of anything right now, but I can't, and I want to jump off a cliff?
Honestly, I think maybe, I think the reason that I never have that problem is twofold. One, because I'm an introvert and I don't talk to people that much, as far as just like in my day to day, it all builds up. Mm. And so then I just have a whole cache of things to talk about.
Yeah.
But also, the other part of it is that I can carry a conversation whether the other person answers or not. I can fully just monologue and just be like, you know, what's an example? Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes when I'm by myself, I pretend like I am, like, being interviewed for some big thing, and I'll come up with whatever that big thing is. Mm-hmm. Who's there with me? What they're being interviewed for? Did some drama happen? And, like, going off on this whole thing. And, like, I could continue to talk about that for 10 minutes with examples. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if it was a situation where no one else is talking and it's just painful, I would just be like, so the other day, and just, like, start telling a story, and just, like, and if no one answers, then that's going to get me on a different story. And I'm just going to keep going until someone pipes up and is like, oh, that reminds me of something, you know?
All right, so here's another one. You're, and stop me if you have any.
Go ahead.
So you're trying to bring people into the fold, or you're trying to kind of test the waters out on this new group of people that you think would be good friends, right? Whether it's a friend of a friend, or whether, like, you know, let's say Samuel met these people from work and he's like really, really getting along with them, and he's like, they're having a dinner party, I gotta bring you over, right? And so you're there, you don't know any of these people, you know that your connection to these people really gets along with them. What's your opening chess move to try and open the door for conversation, or do you even have one?
You know, I don't know. So like, for instance, with Samuel's family, I was just very nervous because his family is, like, almost all extroverted. And so they're all just, like, big time, all over each other energy. And I'm like, huh, okay. and there's a million of them. And so I'm always just like, okay, this is like a little stressful, but all right. So with them, it wasn't even so much that I opened with it. It was that I knew they were going to ask me questions. And so I would just be there. Like, I would just be available for them to ask me questions and just be kind of looking around as though, like, not closing myself off, like, you know, just kind of looking around at everybody else and, like, you know, being engaged in what's happening.
I'm open to being talked to right now.
Right, yeah. And giving that opening, and usually someone would approach me, and now I'll approach other people, but even still, if, like, if most of my people have floated away, I just do that, and someone approaches me within, like, a minute. The other thing is, I do the whole kind of, like, what would you call it? Like, sliding into the conversation eventually.
Yeah.
Which is, like, if I hear a conversation, like, for instance, if I didn't know Aaron that well, but he and Samuel are having a conversation, and, like, he's talking about something funny that happened at work, I would just kind of loiter, like, nearby.
Kind of drift in.
And whenever they laugh, I would just join in and kind of laugh along until I kind of have slid into the conversation.
Yeah.
And then I've can add my comments. But, like, it's a slide in, you know? Right. It's, like, it's very gradual. And the only other thing I have is if the person that I, that, like, I am connected to all these other people by clearly, like, is, oh, what's the right way to say it? If there's, like, playful kind of teasing amongst everybody, that's my in. Is just being like, oh, yeah, I've got tons of stuff. And just, like, and you know, like, joking about or sharing funny stories.
Yeah,
about,
I've,
like,
even seen that in action.
Right, about, like, about the person so that I can kind of vibe with them. And right. Just be, and then they're like, oh, my gosh, you got all the good stories. And I'm like, yeah, I got all the good stories, you know? Wait till you hear this one and then tell them another one. And because it's about that person, it's not really about me, then it's like, okay, we're bonding through that person even more, yeah. And then gradually I can, like, get in there.
Okay. See, my opening chess move, which fails very, very rarely.
I thought you were going to say very often.
Very, very, all the time, always. So I'm going in, let's say it's my partner's friend group, right? Not my current partner, but just, like, a partner's friend group. And, you know, it's just a bunch of people that I don't know. And, you know, my partner's talked me up a lot. This is my boyfriend. I really, really like him. You know, so everyone's going in there like, I hope he's cool. But we're also kind of testing him and seeing if he's cool. So there's, like, a little bit of an adversarial thing. He's the guy taking our friend away from us. So there's that weird tension there. And so what I'll do is if I'm being invited over to somebody's house, That's when I'm really out of my element, because I the reason why I have everything here is because it's my home turf and I feel a lot more comfortable because I have that air of control. But when I'm at somebody else's house, it's like, oh shit, we're kind of jumping off and we're hoping this parachute works. And so what I'll do is I will scan the room immediately. I'll walk into the house. Hey, how's everyone doing? Beep, 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 beep. And my head, my eyes are just darting like crazy going, okay, I'm taking everything in. I'm looking at the decorations. I'm looking at the DVDs. I'm looking at the this. I'm looking at the that, right? I'm looking at everything that I can see that will give me a profile as to who these people are. And if I see anything in there where there's a commonality, I celebrate it. So there's like a sword on the wall, right? Get out of here. Oh my God. Is that real? Is that a real sword? Let me see that. What kind of sword is that? What is that? A short sword? That's sick as hell, dude. I didn't know you were a big fan. Like, let's talk about it. Celebrating that, showing interest up front and open. It's the opening chess move. The opening chess move is they're like, let's see if who this guy is. And then I immediately go in with, oh yeah, that's sick. Then it's very disarming. And a prime example of that was way back in high school. I was dating this girl. God, it was a relationship I shouldn't have been in. And we had dated for a lot longer than we should have. I was an idiot. And she came from an uber religious household. Uber religious. Like, we had to hide the fact that I was an atheist at the time. Because then we wouldn't be allowed to date. I think I was a sophomore in high school. And so... but the thing is, I treated her really well. Like, I was a really, really, really good guy to her because I was just an absolute goody two-shoes sweetheart at that point in my life and just thrilled that there was a woman paying me any attention. So I go over to have dinner at her family's and they are grilling me, right? And I'm doing my best to play verbal tennis with them. And the dad, big old Southern country bumpkin, takes me out. He's like, hey, Tyler, I want to show you the, I want to show you my man shed outside. You want to come out and take a little look-see with me? It's middle of the night. It's pitch black outside. I'm like, yeah, great.
That's where you go to die.
Yeah. Well, he opens the door, brings me in, and turns the light on once I'm inside, shuts the door behind me, and it's wall-to-wall guns. And he's obviously trying to intimidate
yes.
me. Yes. Right? And so I looked at it, and it's like, this guy's trying to scare me in this moment. What would he not expect? Right? And so I'm looking around. Now, I had played a lot of, war video games and FPSs and things like that. So I know generally the names of some of these guns, right? And he had a lot of historical weapons from World War II. I take one look and I'm like, is that a Car 98? Oh my God, that is the coolest thing. Whoa, what is that? Is that a Colt? Like, tell me about it. And he immediately was just on, now he's on the back foot.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it is. How did you get your hands on that? Well, I go to gun shows and I'm on different auction markets. That is so sick. Oh my God. Because that's got the clip. That's not an actual magazine, right? Because it's a Springfield and whatever. Just going into what I know of guns, right? Not much, but in the gaps that I don't know, you ask questions. We were arm in arm, buddy the entire for the rest of the night. Right? He's just like, I like this kid. And it's just like, oh, thank God. This guy's going to shoot me. And then we broke up and he wanted to shoot me.
You know, how the story was always going to end.
Yeah, exactly.
He just lets you pick the gun.
That's right. How do you want to die? You know what? Let's go with a larger caliber. Get me with a .44. That I can go out like a champ.
Well, did you have any more?
I did. This was the closing one that I had, though.
Okay.
And this is a relatively pertinent example.
Okay.
And you'll know why as soon as I ask the question. You're having a conversation with a dear friend. Tensions are high, and you're fighting for this person to stick around. He's being distant and not engaging. How do you get him to open up?
Oh, boy. See, for me, I know our answers are going to be so vastly different. Honestly, for me, I tend to kind of do a bit of a similar thing to what I do with like the groups or like or just the people in general that aren't talking. My move in general is monologue until they join in. And like I'll ask like in the middle of the monologue, I might ask a question like, "Has that ever happened to you?"
Mm-hmm.
And if they're just like, "No," then I'll be like, "Bam, well then you're lucky." And then I just kind of move on as though nothing happened. Until eventually I usually wear them down, and they're just finally like, okay, I'll join in because you seem to be having so much fun in this conversation by yourself. Maybe I can have some fun too.
Yeah.
You know, the other part of it is usually I'll just kind of stop. If that doesn't work, then I'll kind of stop and just like, you know, I sometimes won't even look at them. I'll try to make it as casual as possible and just be like, I hope you know that you can actually talk to me. Like you may
like
you may not feel like you can, like there may be something keeping you from thinking that, but you can, and if you want it to stay right here, it'll stay right here. Not gonna force you, just letting you know. And then I go back with whatever else I'm doing.
Oh, I really like that. I really like that. For me, it's try and open with something that I know we both enjoy, an inside joke, an in-house meme or something like that, going with something that I know consistently made you smile or made you laugh. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, immediately go on the offensive.
On the offensive?
And it punch him right in the fucking mouth. No, I'm kidding. If that doesn't...
It's now a fist fight.
Right. If that doesn't work, immediately go into the... Is everything good? What's wrong? What's wrong? Why are you being like this? Right? And then, oh, I don't want to talk about it. No. Not here. Not now. Not with me. What's going on? We're cool. We're tight. Why does it feel like we're not tight in this moment? Right? And just kind of gently apply pressure, because I feel like in those moments, acknowledging the tension and getting right to it, as opposed to just putting on airs and pretending for hours on end, that's not going to do anything. No one's benefiting from that, because then it's just two people who are going to go home to their partners and complain, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's so clearly that's exactly what it's going to be. So just go in there and just say, hey, there's this illusion that we can't, but kind of like you said, right? There's this illusion that we can't talk about the elephant in the room. We can talk about it. We can have that discussion and we can do it. And you know something? It might actually make you feel better if we talk about it.
Well, yeah, I know for me, I just don't like to apply the pressure in those situations, just because if the person's going to open up, I want it to be fully, like, their choice to come to me.
Nah, fuck their autonomy.
And I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just for me, again, it's kind of like the, I feel like that only works for extroverts thing.
And where, exactly why I brought it up.
Right, where, like, for introverts, I find more success if I just let people come to me than if I push and try to either, like, force a friendship or anything like that. I'm like, it's better if I, you know, I can express like my interest and my openness in like in the friendship or in the conversation, but rather than just being like, you know, okay, we're going to talk about this. Like the only way that I'm going to do that is if I feel like me and the person are good and it's not like going to be a life ruining conversation. But if there's any chance that it could be, like, end of whatever, whatever, and it's just not going to work, then I'm like, you're coming to me, bro. I'm not I'm not going to be the one throwing it there. You have to open, even, like, it's not even, it doesn't even have to be like a, okay, I'm going to tell you everything. It can just be as simple as, I don't know, it's just really hard. The door's open. And then I jump on it and I'm like, okay, tell me why.
Yeah,
tell me why. Like immediately, as soon as the door is open, even a sliver, I'm like, whatever you're letting come through the door, I'm pulling through the door. Like, but now that you've opened it, I can get my hand inside, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, simply put, you stand there with open arms and say, hey, I'm here. When you're ready to do this, and I will treat you with the civility and dignity that you deserve, and I have open arms that wrap around the person's waist and drag them kicking and screaming,
grab them by the shoulders and shake them. The whole time.
No. You're coming with me, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. It's kind of maybe it's the reason why I like prefer cats as well is because they fully have to just choose to come to you.
Yep.
And for me, I like love it so much more if like an animal chooses me or if a person like comes to me and is like, we're going to talk about this. Cause then I'm just like, oh, thank God. Okay, great. Like you trust me enough. Awesome. But that's not saying that's the right way. That's just me with my own trust being such an you know, little supply. I appreciate when other people give me theirs because I'm like, you know, I have none. So whenever people give me theirs, it just means a lot.
Cats would hurt my feelings more than they would make me happy, and that's why I'm not a cat owner. Well, that and they would kill me. But
yeah, I was about to say, I feel like that's the bigger problem.
I feel like I can say this, and if not, we can cut this out. The elephant in the room with this is that we have a mutual friend who we believe is going down a darker path and is making mistakes that are a lot of which self-inflicted, but a lot of which are inflicted by a bad influence on this person. And that influence is pulling this person away from us, who we believe, because, I mean, we like to think that we're good people. I think we're good people.
I would love to know what the listeners think.
Right, yeah. Like, I mean, we're not perfect, but, like, one of the things that I love the most about this group is that we kind of, we don't shy away from that.
Yeah.
Right? We acknowledge often if we get stuff wrong, we try and fix it and make it right as best and as quickly as we can.
We have like, you know, one-on-ones like different people in the group do all the time just airing out like, "Hey, this bothered me. Let's talk about it."
Exactly.
Or like, "Hey, I am I overreacting to this? Like, let's talk about it."
You know? Oftentimes if excuse me, good Lord. Oftentimes, if I'm twisted about something, because I automatically assume that the person that has got me twisted is not intentionally doing it, I'll go to them and say, "Hey, am I wrong for feeling a little slighted about this?" Right? And it puts the onus on me instead of the onus on you. If you did something, not you, but if the metaphorical you did something that made me feel disrespected, but I know in my heart that you wouldn't do that intentionally, coming to you and say, "Hey, this happened. It made me feel like this. Am I wrong for feeling like that? Or can we talk about it? And it's like, oh, no. I didn't mean to make you feel like that. Great. You didn't mean to, but let's talk about why I did. Yeah. And I feel like we all kind of come into different accents and different ways in which we say the same thing. But I think I wouldn't be as loyal and as devoted to this family that we've built mm-hmm. if I didn't think that we were all consistently good people. And it's sad because this person is throwing a lot away and making what everyone would believe is a pretty big series of mistakes. And at what point do you go, you are no longer worth actively fighting for? Each time we try and open the door, you're grabbing the handle and slamming it shut as hard as you can. And at what point do we go, you know, I hate to say this because this is harsher terminology than I would prefer, but you're a lost cause. And frankly, I'd rather invest my time in people who want to invest their time back.
So two things. One, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to get to that point of being like, it's just not worth the fight. But I think I hit that point with this person a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You are a very different person. I think it's going to be a long time before you're done.
Well, because I just don't want to give up on people.
Well, I know. And, you know what I mean? And that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, that is a huge difference between you and me is that if someone, you know, shows me that they don't really care about me, mm-hmm. then I'm kind of like, okay. That's all I needed to know.
Right.
Like, you're free to go.
Right.
But, you know, that's the difference. And the other thing I was going to say, going back a little bit, is, God, I'm so grateful for Samuel. Because I have the opposite problem. Where you're like, I never assume that someone's doing something maliciously. I'm like, I always assume it's malicious.
If I feel bad for anything, it's because you hate me. Like, just go ahead and say it.
Like, I look at situations and immediately look at, how could this be intentional? Mm-hmm. Like, as opposed to an accident. He always has to remind me of, like, it's probably not intentional.
Yeah.
It's probably an accident. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whew, deep breaths. You're probably right.
Yeah.
But look at the evidence that says otherwise. And then I start, like, and I start pitching a whole case about how actually... It's on purpose because they gave me a weird look at 8:17 mm-hmm. on Thursday.
And I want to dive into why that is.
And what happened right before that. And I go into the whole, like, rundown of all the evidence I've gathered. And I'm like, here it is. And he's like, you're fucking crazy. And I'm like, you're probably right. And then I take it back.
Because to your point about that, like, I... Big up. I guess kind of about assuming the worst or assuming the best in people. People in my circle, I try as often, and I'm not perfect. I don't get it right 100% of the time. But I, as often as I can, when I feel slighted, I want to make sure, I want to know what the intention is before I get past a certain threshold of twisted, right? Like, I'll feel a certain kind of way. And, you know, you or not you, but you know what I mean? But like the metaphorical
no,
you,
I've done
the
things.
Person,
you can use
I mean,
me
yeah,
as an example.
You know, we'll do something and I'm like, oh, I didn't love that. Okay. But instead of just immediately thinking that you're this venomous snake woman who's trying to hurt me always, I take a step back and just, question, I'm raising my hand for the listeners at home. Question, was this what you meant? No, of course not. Okay, good. I thought so, but let's talk about it, right?
Well, and with my things, I've just tried to be better about being self-aware of, like, the moments when, like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. So that I can get ahead of any of the twistedness as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we've both had experience with some anger issues and sometimes
I don't know what you're talking about.
And sometimes I'm really bad about, like, there will be it comes up unexpectedly. Like when I snapped at you recently, mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
It erupted from my body and I went, well, that wasn't a good thing. And moving on.
but what happened? You immediately addressed it. And I was like, hey, message received. This is how it made me feel. And we're good. And that's the thing is we genuinely were. And I think the apex of that in terms of conflict resolution was you know, the new kind of phrasing that I'm using now, which if something is actually getting to a point of hostility, taking how they're making me feel and saying, you wouldn't do that. Like, that's not the person that I know, right? That's not, you're not the woman that I know who would do this to me. So explain to me how I've got this wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got a little bit of time, so I'll briefly, since this is a big catch-up episode, yep, for all the listeners at home, and because I've already shared so much about this, the update that that happened during this time period was my dad walked out on my brother and I again, and for the last time, because we are not letting him back in ever again, because you can't do this twice and expect to just have a seat at the table, right? And while that was happening, I, you know, being a quote-unquote man of principles and quote-unquote honor, throwing what is happening in his face, and you're going to walk out on us because of a perceived disrespect that I am telling you was not intentional. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't throw yourself back into this quote-unquote hell that you quote-unquote felt when you were away from us the first time. So you wouldn't do that. And I need to hear you tell me that you would. And I was thinking, like, well, no, of course not, but I can work with that. I can work with, of course not, but this is mm-hmm. the issue. Because now I know that your intention isn't to be hateful.
Yeah.
And when I heard, no, that's exactly what it is, it's like, okay, you've said everything I needed to hear, and I'm not going to feel twisted about it. And yeah, that's the coolest part, is does it hurt at times? Absolutely. Is it... It is nowhere even remotely close to as visceral as I thought it would be, mm-hmm, the second time around, because there's such a level of definitive, no. What you don't understand is I am a genuinely fucking bad guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, if you are capable of all of this, the past be damned, and the good thing, all the good works, all the positive effects that you've had on our lives is completely irrelevant if you are capable of doing something like this,
yeah,
right? Is that what you don't understand is that this moment of evil eclipses a lifetime of some good and some bad. We're all people. We're all going to do some good and some bad. But this completely skews the ledger in the opposite direction. And so kind of seeing him for who he really is and hearing from his own mouth that this is who he is and what he's capable of is like, well, do I want that person in my life? No. I really genuinely don't. And so it gave a level of finality to it. But I started using that, which is that you wouldn't do this to me, right? You wouldn't do something like this. That's not the person that I know. So, and that's a really good, like, final... It's like a final put-away shot, almost, to confirm, are you a villain or are you making a mistake? Because that's the big differentiator. I can work with mistakes. We can work through mistakes 10 ways to Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. There is no mistake that you or Samuel or anybody in the group can make that would make me think less of you if the intention was not to be hurtful, which it never is, so I'm never that twisted, right? Yeah. That doesn't mean I'm immune to being hurt by the immediacy of something, because it's like, well, I mean, yeah, still don't do that, but there is a chasm of differences between, oh, you know what, hey, that was on me, I didn't mean it like that, yep, then there's nothing to forgive, we're past it, right, it's all good, and, well, yeah, I meant it, and I'll say it again, oh, well, hold on now, what the fuck?
Yeah, because now you're in a different zone.
Exactly, it takes it to a completely different place, yeah. And this group and this family has been pretty fucking consistent that the intentions are always good, the execution might not be perfect, I'm God knows the biggest fucking contributor of that, as I get things wrong on a moment-to-moment basis.
I'm a decent contributor to that too, but that's just because I'm grumpy a lot of the time. and so I'll just kind of like have a sour, like I'll be in a sour mood, like not all the time, mm-hmm, but I feel like more often than a lot of people. That's probably not a great thing, but yeah, you know.
But that's the same, but at the same point, right? That is a disposition thing that you're actively working on.
Well, yeah, I don't ever, and my biggest thing is that I never want to be the person that brings down the room. I'll sit in the room and my dark cloud might just stay there, but I only want it over me.
Mm.
I'm like, I don't want the rest of the room to start getting bummed out or feeling awkward because I'm not in a good mood. So, like, I'll try to just keep it to myself. But the problem is I have big energy. That's the problem.
What a good way to close out the episode, because in that same vein, right, being an introvert, when you close yourself off and just take a quiet moment to yourself to kind of compartmentalize, mm-hmm. nobody looks at that as out of character, because if an introvert becomes quiet, it's just like, that's par for the course. It can't be anything that deep unless you let us know or let us in that it is that deep, that you are upset about something. That's expanding that rain cloud, right? Mm-hmm. For an extrovert, if I'm upset about something and it's hitting a critical mass where it's going to affect my behavior, never in a toxic aggressive way, but like if I know that this, whatever the mood I'm in, is going to affect how I treat people or look at people or whatever, and I recede into, okay, let's let these wounds real quick and recover so that I can join the fight. Because I have such a big energy, it's noticeable immediately. And yep. because everybody is so caring and so good, it doesn't take but 5 seconds before I'm like, ooh, okay, you know what? I'm gonna shut down for a second. I'm gonna reboot the computer. I'm holding down the power button. And then it doesn't take but 2 seconds before 15 text messages come in. Hey, are you good? Hey, are you good? Hey, what's going on? Hey, talk to me. And it's just like, I love all of you. And here's the thing. Every time I get that, it does help. Immediately, mm-hmm. just to know that I'm seen in that way. But it does, and this isn't a bad thing, so I don't want anything to change about it, but it does add that tiny little pinch of mind your fucking P's and Q's, because if you're actually shook about something and you don't want to talk about it right then and there and you recede inward, you're going to get people who are going to want you to open up, and sometimes I'm not always there.
Well, but that's also okay. You know, I've gotten messages from you, from John, from Colton, whenever I've been in, like, because I do think that with how much time all of us spend together, specifically, like, the group that's been together for a very long time, we all can kind of tell when it's kind of, you know, like, introvert, normal, I'm just kind of, like, a little quieter, and I'm just chilling, and I'm upset.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it's a huge difference on the outside, but we know each other so well now that it's easy to just, like, look and be like, that ain't right. Mm-hmm. And
it's your brow.
Right. Well, I don't even know.
No, for
like,
you,
oh,
your
for me.
Tell, your specific tell is your brow. Your eyes are just your eyes have a certain level of wideness when you're in a good mood, and your eyes will narrow and your brow will furrow just like by a half of a millimeter. And in that, I'm like, oh, she's upset. What's and then I'll be like, thing. One of two things is true. You need someone or you need me to stay the fuck away from you. Which one is it?
See, for you, it's everything on the lower half of your face.
Mm.
Like, if I can tell that it's fully, like, slack,
mm-hmm.
then I can tell you're more upset. Whereas if it's more engaged, like you're about to start talking at any moment, mm-hmm. then you're fine.
Yeah, another big thing for me, too, that I actually noticed recently was, I'm being Mr. ADHD man, I'm kind of always bouncing around and moving
mm-hmm.
when I'm engaged in the conversation. But if I have to maintain a level of engagement, but I'm kind of shutting down, I will be like a statue. I'll stop moving, and then my whole body will be resting, and it will be very, very obvious immediately, because it's like, oh, he's not bouncing around anymore. What's wrong? And it's like, don't fucking say another word.
No, but it is nice to, you know, to get those messages in those times when you are upset.
Yes.
What's funny is when the person that upset you texts you and is like, hey, are you good? And you're just like, you fucking prick. Like,
you would ask me that, wouldn't you?
You would. Like, but it's funny because that does happen.
Right.
And because sometimes the person doesn't even know.
Of course.
Like they're course. Like, I didn't know I did anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you know? And even if it's like that person texting me, or if it's just a bunch of people, even if I don't want to talk about it, I'll just say, I don't really want to talk about it, but thank you. You
right.
know?
Right.
And if I want to talk about it later, then I'll reach back out to them and just be like, hey, thanks for saying something. Here's what it was, you know? I personally don't feel weird about just being like, I'm not going to talk about this right now. But, mm-hmm. But I know that may be harder for some.
I'm getting better at it, I think. I'm finding that I'm getting to a better place of, you know what? Because for the longest time, my whole life even, I've been very immediate with things. I knew exactly how I felt in that moment. If you do something, and this is when I was younger and more brash, but if something happens that I don't like and you ask me, hey, what's wrong? I know exactly what's wrong. It's this, right? And I was so quick on the draw. And I would date people and be friends with people who didn't immediately know.
I don't know most of the time.
Right, and that was an adjustment for me, because I remember my long-term partner would take sometimes days before she would understand kind of what it was that upset her.
Same.
And that wasn't a language I spoke at the time. So it was just like, she was like, oh, I didn't like what you did. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, what is it? Nope. What do you mean, nope? What fuck do you mean, nope?
See, most of the time, what it is with Samuel, if it's something with Samuel, or if it's something even with, like, one of our friends or something, I'll just kind of start throwing out what I think it is. And usually it's, like, a bunch of different, it's kind of like a detective trying to solve the case. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm throwing things at the wall until something sticks and feels like, that's it. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'll throw out a million things to Samuel of, like, I think it could be this. No, yeah. Wait. No, it's not that. Or maybe that's part of it. But I think now that it's this, and usually there will be a moment in, whether it's the same day or the next day, where I just text him and I'm like, I figured it out. And it's like, and it's suddenly like, I know exactly what it is, or at least what a big part of it is, and it's this. And he's very good about, like, you know, kind of calling out if he thinks anything might be coming from somewhere else. Like, if I throw something out there and he's like, I don't know, that feels like this little issue that you have trying to speak up. And I'm like, damn you for knowing me so well. I was trying to hide.
You know what's tricky about that is that is oftentimes how I am, especially with partners. And my current partner, who I love, what's up, sweetie, is an enigma wrapped inside a mystery wrapped inside a much larger locked box that is also an enigma and a puzzle that I can't solve. So if anything, God forbid, which very, very rarely, if ever, happens, that where she's twisted about something, it's, you know, I go into psychoanalyst mode and I'm just like, well, you know, I think it might be this. And she's like, not even fucking close, but thanks for trying. It's like, what? What do you mean? What do you mean not even close? Excuse me.
Well, and that's
that is an adjustment.
Well, and the thing that you know, that I appreciate about Samuel is that he never tries to dictate what it is. He'll just ask, like, do you think that might be coming from this, or mm-hmm. is this totally just coming from this issue?
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me a like, you know, kind of the opening to look at it and be like, is he onto something, or is he grasping at straws? Mm-hmm. Like, let's feel that one out, you know? Right. Let's see if that hits anything, you know?
Yeah. And anyway, yeah, well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We definitely missed this, and now that we have this season of rest,
yes.
We will be banking some episodes and sending them out on a much more regular basis, so hopefully that does
basically,
something.
Basically, on a regular basis up until whatever the spring show is starts up and takes up all our time again.
Yes, so we'll be very vocal once that spring show is announced, which should be by the end of this month, I believe. So by the end of November, hopefully. Just be on the lookout for it. In the meantime, if you have money burning a hole in your pocket, we are looking for sponsors to sponsor both the season, Mad Artists as a whole, or the show that we're going to be working on in the future. So if you have money, or you know people who have money and want advertising space and a group of people to really sing your praises, please feel free to reach out to either me or Danielle. My email is tyler.madartist@gmail.com and Danielle's is danielle.madartist@gmail.com. Please feel free to reach out with us with any kind of inquiries for what our sponsorship package looks like, because your money goes a long way in helping us make better art. And we appreciate our sponsors. All of our sponsors who currently work with are amazing. We don't have any of them. And so we would love to be shouting them out, but neither here nor there. This has been great. I've been Tyler.
I've been Danielle.
And this has been refreshing.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, this has been refreshing. Bye-bye.